Translation: Suta Goswami said, "Thus Sukadev Goswami, being invited by Maharaj Parikshit to speak on topics of the Lord Sri Krishna with the devotees, was very much pleased." Purport given by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada ki. Srimad Bhagavatam can be legitimately discussed only among the devotees of the Lord. As the Bhagavad Gita was authoritatively discussed between Lord Krishna and Arjun, the Lord and the devotee respectively, similarly, Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the postgraduate study of the Bhagavad Gita, can also be discussed between the scholars and devotees, like Sukadev Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit. Otherwise, the real taste of the nectar cannot be relished. Sukadev Goswami was pleased with Maharaj Parikshit because he was not at all tired of hearing the topics of the Lord and was more and more anxious to hear them on and on with interest. Foolish interpreters unnecessarily tackle the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam when they have no access to the subject matter. There is no use in non-devotees meddling with the two topmost Vedic literatures, and therefore Shankaracharya did not touch Srimad Bhagavatam for commentation. In his commentation on the Bhagavad Gita, Sripad Shankaracharya accepted Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but later on he commented from the impersonalist's view. But being conscious of his position, he did not comment on the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Sukadev Goswami was protected by Lord Krishna, Vida Brahma Vaivarta Purana, and therefore he is known as Brahmarata. And Sriman Parikshit Maharaj was protected by Vishnu, and thus he is known as Vishnurata. As devotees of the Lord, they are always protected by the Lord. It is clear also in this connection that a Vishnurata should hear Srimad Bhagavatam from Brahmarata and no one else, because others misrepresent the transcendental knowledge and thus spoil one's valuable time. Suta uvacha sa upamantrito rajna kathayam iti satpate brahmarato brishamprito vishnuratena samsidi. Suta Goswami said, "Thus Sukadev Goswami, being invited by Maharaj Parikshit to speak on topics of the Lord Sri Krishna with the devotees, was very much pleased." Om Jnanati Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Ragunatam Bitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijanam Jana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakambitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Nami Hari Priya Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyebacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnanebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So I please ask the blessings of all the Vaishnavas assembled here, the seniors on site and online. So it's interesting actually because, you know, we can see that from Canto 2 as it starts, the conversation really kicks off between Sukadev Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj. And you know, you can see that obviously in the first two chapters of Canto 2, there's various questions being asked. And at certain points, Sukadev Goswami would speak certain truths and then pause, and then Parikshit Maharaj then also look at further more questions to ask. And it's also interesting how Prabhupada mentions here, he gives the comparison to Bhagavad Gita and how just like Lord Krishna and Arjun were speaking Bhagavad Gita, so similarly Sukadeva Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj are speaking here. And you can see as well that when Krishna starts speaking the Bhagavad Gita in chapter 2, around verse 11, it's also mentioned that Krishna was very pleased to, he smiled after Arjun asked his questions and then Krishna started speaking. And the smile, it said actually when Krishna was smiling, it's smiling because obviously he was going to also chastise Arjun because all these questions you're posing to me, they are just coming from your bewilderment. There's no real value in what you're saying, trying to avoid fighting in the war. But there's also the aspect that Krishna's smiling because he was happy that Arjun is finally actually surrendering to him and really wanting to know what is the value of what he should do. And similarly here, because also that gives opportunity for Krishna to drop his mercy bombshells, It's like, okay, finally I've got a questioner who's going to facilitate for me to actually share the nectar with the world. And similarly here as well, we can see that with Parikshit Maharaj, that Sukadeva Goswami is so happy that Parikshit Maharaj is asking these questions, and it just gives him further and further opportunity to actually drop his mercy, give more and more mercy to, obviously through him, to mankind in general. Last week when Tona Krishna Prabhu was giving class, he mentioned how it's not, often we look at the qualification of the speaker, which is obviously very important. Like, who's a speaker? Who am I learning from? Are they people of spotless conduct? Are they of, exemplary character, especially in Vaishnav tradition? It's very important. We listen from the right source. You see in the last past few verses, and even in this verse, it's very important that we listen from the right parampara. Prabhupada does talk about Shankaracharya and why he did not comment on the Bhagavatam, which we'll look at later. At the same time, we have to look at the qualification of the hearer as well. When the, analogy is given, just like when the man and the woman are fertile, then pregnancy can occur. So similarly, when the speaker and the hearer are also ripe and fertile, then something beautiful, some magic can actually happen between the speakers here. Okay? And Tona Krishna mentioned, he gave the example when he tries to put his kids to bed or get them into their pajamas and things like that, that if the kids are not listening, he could be saying the same instruction again and again, but they're not going to listen. And so that's not just applies to kids. I think applies to all of us, right? When you're not in the mindset, you could be giving a whole orientation to someone and they're not going to listen. I'll be honest with you, I've probably been there myself as well, where someone says something, I can just see their mouth moving and I don't know what they're saying. Probably spacing out somewhere. So, but in this case, we have the perfect hearer, Parikshit Maharaj. And his hearing is coming out of absolute faith. It's coming out of complete faith. So there are two types of Shraddha. Actually, I should give credit where credit's due. We had a retreat last year. Avakeshav Maharaj, he actually gave a little understanding on it. But these are important concepts here that there's two types of faith, Lokika Shraddha and Swabhavika Shraddha. So Lokika Shraddha is faith. When we come to a spiritual tradition, we have a desire to connect with the Lord. At the same time, when we come to a movement, we have our mixed desires. We have our, our own kind of agenda as to why we're practicing this spiritual path. Bit like, and when you look at the Bhagavad Gita, they have the Sakam Karma Yoga, Nishkam Karma Yoga. So I know the Bhakti Shastri boys have been looking at that recently, where you're doing your bhakti, but with desires, or even if you get to Nishkam, maybe the desire for results may go, but the attachment to certain ways of expression still stays, or how you want to express yourself in your bhakti, because that still gives you some pleasure, right? Also with that, there are also other things that comes, possibly desire for fame and prestige, things like that. So this is like Lokika Shraddha. Most people, when they come to Krishna consciousness, are on that level. Whereas on Swabhavika Shraddha, it's like Ananya Bhakti. It's just nothing but bhakti now. I'm not bothered with anything else. No matter what happens, what the results are materially speaking, whatever I, you know, whatever helps me to connect with Krishna, that's what is basically essential for me, you know. We do an orientation. I know Marge has done it. To be honest, I've also done this one as well. We do this at universities and things where, you know, with like KC Sock or Peace Center, is where, you know, you say that if Krishna was to appear before you right now, or one of his, like, you know, representatives, and was to say, okay, I'm going to take you back right now, take you back to Godhead right now, at this moment, would you drop everything? And just, that's it, I'm ready to leave this world. You know, are you ready to leave? I know Maharaj, you did that recently in our retreat as well. Would you be ready? And like, I was talking to a friend of mine afterwards, like, I'd like to say I would be, I'd like to say, but in all honesty, I don't know. I do know. I don't think I would be, because I try to convince myself that, no, I'd like to stay here because I feel like I want to do more service for Krishna here and do something of substance for him, because I don't feel I've done much, right? But then also, is that actually because I actually love Krishna and want to actually serve him? Or is it because I'm also using Krishna's, like, service for Krishna as a way to, you know, just manifest my desires to achieve? You know what I mean? Yeah, so these things, they, you know, they're definitely there, you know, they come through, you know. Are we ready to actually just drop everything and go? No, I want to achieve a bit more, or, you know, do something good, you know, for the movement or something before I leave. But it could just be because it's my way of me to manifest. Okay, so these are the things. But whereas if you look at someone like Parikshit Maharaj, he dropped everything, right? He dropped everything. And this is an example of someone who's fully surrendered. And in his position, this is an interesting thing, actually, because, you know, when you look at Parikshit Maharaj's curse that he had, you know, in the first canto, right? He was cursed by Sringi. He was ready to, you know, then he thought, okay, in 7 days, I have to leave everything. So externally, we know that, okay, he gave up everything. He gave up, he was ready to give up his body. So there are certain things mentioned here. So Atma, he gave up it. Now, Atma means here not the soul, but the body. Then we've got Jaya, right? So Jaya means wife, right? Ready to give up his wife. Suta, ready to give up kids. Ready to give up Agara, his palace. Ready to give up his Pashu, his facilities, right? Whether it's his, you know, clothes, ministers, influence, his, you know, horses, army, soldiers, all of that. Give up all of that. Dravira, his treasury, right? All the things that make up the power of a king, he's ready to give up all of that. Bandhusu, right? His social circle, his friends, all of that he's ready to give up. And of course, his Rajya, his kingdom, right? He was ready to give up everything. But here's the interesting thing, though. He was actually a very advanced personality. If he wanted to overturn that curse, he could have, but he didn't. So that's actually someone who's not even like, you know, we talk about, okay, sometimes Krishna will put his devotees in a helpless situation where they have no choice but to turn to him, right? But in his case, he could have actually switched it around and not, you know, balanced out the curse and stayed on, because he had that level of devotional potency, but he didn't. He actually just decided that, no, you know what? I'm going to give up everything. I'm ready. He was in his prime. You know, he was like a powerful king. His qualities were like mentioned, you know, like, it's embarrassing talking about this in front of Marge, because a lot of this I'm learning actually through Marge's materials and things. But like, you know, he had dharma. He had the same, he upheld dharma like Yudhishthir Marge. He had the same, he had these different qualities that compared to different people. Like, he upheld, mine's going blank now. Maybe Maharaj can help. You know, he had the qualities like Ikshvaku. He had the qualities like, he had the archery skills, warrior skills like Arjun. Anyway, so like this, he had great qualities, but he decided to give it all up. And this is an example of someone who's completely surrendered and is completely like just qualified to hear the absolute Gatha. Okay. Last week, Lila Shakti Mataji also mentioned how when Parikshit Maharaj was hearing for 7 days from Sukadeva Goswami, he was not hungry at all. You know, and then she gave the example that when we are absorbed in a service, we don't like, Mataji herself was giving an example of when she's doing pujari service, she doesn't feel like she needs to go to attend to her bodily needs or anything like that. She's absorbed. I personally, actually, I can testify that when, like this Christmas, I went for a week to Manchester to do some marathon. It's been a while since I did like full marathon, like, you know, like you do in the ashram. Like, it's, you do always on the weekend with the grihasthas in the congregation devotees, which is really nice. But also, there's a little there's a different flavor when you're going out, you know, out in a, somewhere in the middle of a, you know, in the country somewhere, like doing, I'm sure, like, you know, some of the hardcore marathon devotees can relate. And when I'm on the street, you know, I generally have feet issues, feet problems, and, you know, my feet give me pain. No pain. I realized for those days when I'm on the street, I felt no pain, just carrying on, engaged, just talking to people, everything like that. Just, you know, I have to remind myself to actually drink water, because, you know, you're so focused in the service that, you know, you forget to drink water and stuff. Whereas normally you'd like, you know, okay, I feel thirsty, this and that. But that's why, because when you're absorbed in something, that it actually takes away your bodily issues. It takes away your bodily needs. And that's why with Sukadeva Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj himself, he's got that. He's completely absorbed. He's addicted. And I guess we should pray that we can also be addicted to hearing Krishna Gatha. Often, for I'm speaking for myself here, it's often we have to give that determination to push for it, you know? Whereas, you know, if let's say a person goes to watch a film, and it's a good film, 3 hours long, they, like, you know, back in the day, you know, like they used to make big films, and you can just watch it, and there's like no issue, isn't it? You can just completely zone out or zone in and just watch. If there's like a really good book, I know a lot of people, devotees included, they watch things like Netflix and all that kind of stuff, and they can binge in front of Netflix for like hours on end. And like, imagine if only we had that level of absorption, if we can actually just completely get absorbed in, like, you know, nectar of Krishna Katha and, you know, Krishna consciousness hour after hour after hour. So, yes, so I thought that was a really amazing, and I think from Parikshit Maharaj we can at least pray that we can get that level of absorption and immersion that he has as well. Okay, so we looked at the qualification of a hearer, which Prabhupada talks about here. Then Prabhupada talks about foolish interpreters who unnecessarily tackle the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is very interesting, and Prabhupada talks about Shankaracharya, right? So I'm sure most of us have heard of Shankaracharya. We know that obviously Shankaracharya is actually, he's the topmost devotee, Vaishnavanam Yathasambhu. He's actually Lord Shiva himself. He had a purpose to come here. For those of you, everyone knows about Shankaracharya and his background? So, you know, he came and, you know, his purpose was actually to mislead the people, right? For a reason. Because, you know, the general populace was misusing the Vedas, and they were committing all sorts of offenses and abuse in the name of Vedic principles. So then Krishna himself comes as Lord Buddha to take people away from the Vedic paradigm, completely off the authority of the Vedas, and just get them to be good people, you know. Just be ahimsa, just be non-violent, you know. Forget about the Vedas and all these spiritual other high-level tattva. Just be good people with good morals, ethics, and values. And then we know that Shankaracharya comes in, and then he brings back the authority of the Vedas, but in an impersonalistic way, because you can't stray too far from the Buddhist philosophy, because that's what most people are going for. We step too far to just go from Buddhism straight to, like, you know, Golok Vrindavan, Krishna, Prema Bhakti, you know? So he needs to kind of be like the bridge in the middle. But at the same time, Prabhupada is also, he glorifies Shankaracharya a lot, actually. But at the same time, makes it very clear that for us, Shankaracharya's purpose and his time has been done. There's no need for us to look into Shankaracharya and follow his teachings. He was there for a particular time and purpose, right? A temporary dharma, Kaitava dharma. Whereas what we're looking at in Srimad Bhagavatam is dharma projitava kaitavatra paramo nitmat saranam satam, right? We're looking at giving up all other varieties of dharma and just focusing on, you know, this Srimad Bhagavatam, which the great sages have given us, Srimad Bhagavatam Mahamune Krite, Kimva Parerishwaraha. And as such, in the Padma Purana, there's a verse which says, Maya Vadam Asat Shastram Prachannam Bodham Uchyate. This Mayavad philosophy, which Shankaracharya was giving, is covered Buddhism. Right? Mayeva Kalpitam Devi Kalo Brahmana Murtina. Lord Shiva himself actually says to his wife, Lord Shiva, that is Shankaracharya, my dear Parvati, in the age of Kali, in the garb of a Brahmana, I'll preach this philosophy. And so that's why he gave his commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. But Prabhupada actually does say in a lecture in C.C. Adilila, Adilila chapter 7, verse 109 to 114 in San Francisco, February 20th, 1967, that this Shankara philosophy is dangerous atheism, and actually it's even more dangerous than general atheism. It's more dangerous than Buddhism and also just general atheistic doctrines that you see in society now, right? Why do you think he said that? Why did Prabhupada say that this is actually more dangerous than just general atheistic doctrines that exist in society? Like, if you look at most philosophies, I'm not talking about Krishna consciousness or things, but, you know, if you go to YouTube and I look at different philosophers or different, like, you know, modern-day social commentators, and when they touch on spirituality, they basically, you'll see that it's generally impersonalistic. But Prabhupada is saying that our own Vedic scholars, like Shankaracharya, this is actually more dangerous than general atheism. Any thoughts? It looks like theism. Okay, Marj, thank you, Marj. So it looks like theism, Taruna Prabhu? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just to corroborate what you're saying, so Prabhupada, this is Prabhupada saying this in this lecture, that therefore they are more dangerous. Just like you are fighting with your enemies, that is very clear. The other party is my enemy, right? When there's someone who's openly atheistic, stands for atheism, you know where they stand, and therefore you can then have that dialogue with them based on that paradigm. But if somebody's treating as your friend and within he's trying to kill you, enemy, oh, that is very dangerous enemy. So similarly, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that Buddhism is atheism. That's all right. But the Shankara's philosophy is more dangerous than atheism. And actually so-called so many swamis and sannyasis, they come from India. They are the same dangerous atheists. So anyway, Prabhupada goes on about that and covering these points. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ji ki, Shri Shri Gornitai ki. So from this we understand, obviously Prabhupada does obviously make it clear, as Mahaprabhu himself said about Shankaracharya, tahara nahika dosh, right? That means actually Shankaracharya is not at fault. Remember, he had a reason why he had to do what he did. But what can we learn from this? Prabhupada here mentions that Shankaracharya did not touch the Bhagavatam as a commentary, right? He kept it to Bhagavad Gita. He didn't go further than that. So one thing as well is that when we're looking at scriptures, you know, there's a saying, right, that civilization, before it gets destroyed by external forces, it actually destroys itself from within, right? First, the internal issues crop up, right? So therefore, one of the things we learn from it is whilst we're studying this Krishna consciousness philosophy, we have to be vigilant, eternally vigilant. Because there are other commentaries that look like our commentaries, but they may mislead us. Shankaracharya is an obvious one. Since he came and went, there have been many others that have come and gone. And also, as we're practicing, even within devotee circles, we have to be vigilant and help each other to make sure that we're on the right track. Because the tendency to want to mentally speculate and make your own sort of, give your own opinions, but whilst claiming to be devotee, it still can seep through. right? And then before you know it, you know, someone, they could be very erudite, very scholarly. They give their own opinions. And it looks very close to what a very good quality devotee would say. But there might be slight little tweaks there in the philosophy here and there. Then gradually, as the years pass, those tweaks can get a bit more bigger and a bit more bigger. And before you know it, they're questioning what Prabhupada is saying. They might even then question Prabhupada themselves. They might even be like under the shelter of Srila Prabhupada, then end up thinking that, no, we can supersede Prabhupada, and actually we need to go higher than what Prabhupada's given us, and maybe even set up something separately away from Prabhupada. And if you're attracted by the external word jugglery, then you might get caught up in that as well. So we have to be very careful about the internal things. That's why when Prabhupada talked about Mayavad philosophy and how we should not be against, how we should be against Mayavad and preaching against Mayavad, we know the famous example of Kirtananda Maharaj, one of Prabhupada's, you know, foremost disciples back in the day. And he said to Prabhupada that, Prabhupada, you keep talking about Mayavad, but, you know, like, it's you know, we're not like, you know, actively going against Mayavad. It's not that we're meeting hordes of people who are like, you know, preaching a Mayavad philosophy and things like that. And Prabhupada says, no, you are the impersonalists. You know, it's not just out there like, oh, we have to defeat the Mayavads out there. The Mayavad tendency, the impersonalistic tendency is within us as well. And this impersonalistic tendency is not just, it's a spiritual thing, right? Obviously we know that. It's basically to deny Krishna, deny his existence. Actually, it will affect people even on a material level. When we have impersonalistic society, where people are treated like consumers, where people are being abused, exploited, which is like the order of the day now, right, in the world, right? Whether it's in the workplace, in relationships, is what I can get from you. How can you serve me for my enjoyment? It's because we impersonalistic philosophy, when it percolates down from the spiritual level, from the nitya level to the naimittika level, right, to the worldly level, and that's what happens, right? If you look at all societies, institutions, they generally have their roots in spirituality. If you look at Western civilization, its roots are in Christianity, the legal system, the government, the military, everything, politics, right? But then what happens is, obviously Jesus is out of the picture now. They've taken Jesus out, but they've kept institutions in place. But what happens when the spirituality, if itself is wrong, it will percolate down. So if there's impersonalistic roots in the spirituality, you will end up also being impersonal with people, and will lead to dehumanization. It will actually lead to that. Just give it time, you know? You know, sometimes we say that the way we treat each other is the way we treat Krishna, is so we treat each other with kindness. It also goes the other way around. The way we view Krishna is also the way we're going to view each other. So if we view Krishna as a non-entity, as just like a non-person, right? That, oh, Krishna, there is no such thing as Krishna, then we're going to end up actually seeing each other as that as well. That actually, you know what, yeah, who are you? I mean, you're just something for me to kind of utilize. You know, I'm not going to see you as someone who I should respect with emotions and, you know, feelings and things like that, and treat in a nice, kind way. So it's a very, very dangerous philosophy that can percolate down. We are living in very much in a Mayavad civilization, actually, without realizing it. So, yeah. So be vigilant. We have to be vigilant with the internals as well as the externals. And of course, I think I'll pause here. And then I don't know if there's any questions or comments that people may have. Yes, Sam Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. So thank you very much, Nishkanjana Prabhu. It was a very nice talk. Something I wanted to add on how Mayavadism, Mayavad philosophy is also dangerous, because I believe Lord Chaitanya also said, because it destroys your devotional kripa.
Absolutely, right? Yeah. Mahaprabhu said, Mayavad bhasha shunile hoy sharbonash, which means that if you listen to Mayavad katha, it will be catastrophic. Hoy sarvanash, right? It will be like disastrous, yeah.
Because Mayavad is kind of the precise opposite of Vaishnava, so this, it can really cripple your belief.
Exactly, which is why it's interesting, because, you know, on the streets, right, You know, sometimes when you have like people say, yeah, oh, is this Buddhism? You know, when you do give out books and stuff. And, okay, let's be honest. We do like, hook onto that, don't we? We say like, oh, yeah, you know, yeah, it's, you know, soul, karma, reincarnation, meditation, you know, yeah, absolutely. You know, we're very similar, you know, Eastern esoteric traditions, you know, which is, you know, okay, fine, whatever we use to, you know, get through the knowledge and everything. And externally, that's the thing, right? Externally, even Buddhism can look very similar to Krishna consciousness. Even their monks, they look like our monks, right? Shaved head, robes, similar colored, right? They look very similar. But no, after a certain point, though, there is a massive difference, and that can take in a completely different direction. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's so... Yes, that's like something I wanted to add, how like Mahayavadism is also very dangerous because it destroys devotional life. Yeah,
thank you. Thank you, Prabhu. Devarshi?
Hare Krishna. You mentioned there was two types of shraddha. Is that in Prabhupada's books or is that in Acharya's?
Acharya's, Maharaj can corroborate. I've heard that in Acharya speak about Laukika Shraddha, Swabhavika Shraddha. Does Prabhupada himself specifically speak about those Shraddhas? Yeah. Yes. The Acharyas as in like the Goswamis, yeah.
I've never came across that.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other points? Anyone? Oh, yes. Prajana Prabhu.
You're right when you point out too that Maharaj Parikshit was a great Mahatma in all respects. He was religious, he followed all the principles, he was completely immersed in his role as a Kshatriya. Certainly he was a person of total sacrifice in whatever he was doing, actually. And he gave attention to that way. And so this is why his involvement with Kali when he met them. Kali knew his potency, immediately became fearful. And yet he gave up everything, all this, to meditate on the law for what it was out of character. He did something out of character. But his code was he must sacrifice for this. He must pay. And it's an amazing kshatriya spirit there as well, you know, for that faith. You know.
So.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Prabhu. And you can see there's a difference here because, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjun also wanted to come out of his kshatriya duties and not fight. But the thing is, yeah, his was slightly different because Krishna knew that him wanting to renounce was not like renunciation in the right mindset. He wanted to avoid his duty of fighting in the war. Whereas with Parikshit Maharaj, it wasn't the case. Parikshit Maharaj was at the top of his game in terms of his kshatriya duties. He was like, there was no fear there. He was doing it willingly, you know, not to avoid anything, but to because he knew that it was the right thing for him to do at this time in his life. He could have carried on as a kshatriya and ruling very nicely. And he could have been one of the great, I mean, one of the greatest kings, but he could have carried on with that greatness. But Krishna had higher plans for him. Krishna said, yes, you can go down in history as a great king, right? Ruling and doing things really nicely. Or, alternatively, what I'm going to do with you is I'm going to take you out of your greatness and elevate to a high level of greatness where you're going to be recipient of a message that's going to change mankind for history, for the future history. So sometimes it seems like what Parikshit Maharaj had to give up was a big thing, big sacrifice, but what Krishna gave in return was a higher level of greatness than just being a great king. Yes, Zumen Koko Lee.
I just wonder how does it exactly destroy the devotional creeper? Like, how does it work?
Because the Mayavad philosophy ultimately is trying to kill Krishna. Because, I mean, there's different varieties of Mayavad philosophy, but ultimately it's basically saying that there's no actual person called Krishna. Krishna is, you could say he's an anthropomorphic representation of the eternal effulgence energy, which we are all part of. So ultimately, that means you are Krishna and I am Krishna. Now, if you say that, okay, you're Krishna, I'm Krishna, and he's Krishna, then ultimately that means there's no difference between us. That means there's no individuality. If there's no individuality between you and me, that means there's no like individuality of Krishna, which means there is no someone higher than us as a higher being who we can surrender to and have a relationship with them. Right? He's basically taking away the individuality of Krishna and us and saying that we're all just one. So it's taking away our own kind of right, our own independence as people, as personalities. You know, it's a dehumanization actually. Or not even dehumanization, like desoulization. Because it's like, you know, taking away our identity as eternal spirit souls. Do you see the difference? And also the thing is also like, you know, I mean, when you look at the Bhagavad Gita, they talk about this. There is a difference between us and Krishna, because if there wasn't, we wouldn't be sitting here trying to learn this. Like, we'd already know this. Why are we in a state of forgetfulness? That means there's a difference between us and Krishna. You know, we would need to read the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam, right? So they're actually trying to completely take away Krishna as a person from the equation. And then they will actually make you also lose your own personhood as well. Yes, Parama Karuna? Oh, I saw his hand. Yeah.
Thank you, Prabhu, for the wonderful class. In this situation, we see where you are describing that Parikshit Maharaj is seeing this as Krishna's arrangement, and therefore he's not going to counter the curse. But earlier on, he's feeling thirsty, hungry maybe, but then he puts this snake on the sage. He's not seeing it as Krishna's arrangement. So then how do we decipher when it's Krishna's arrangement and when we should actually do something, when we should fight, when we should, go against something. So you just wanted to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, we have the time and tested formula of Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, especially when it comes to important decisions in our life, when to fight, what kind of life choices we make, you know, like life decisions, things like that. I mean, to be completely honest, when it comes to knowing Parikshit Maharaj and why he acted in that way when he put the snake on Shamika Rishi, and then later having this moment of clarity where he didn't act against the curse. So the reason we know like why he acted the way he did was because of the commentaries of the acharyas, like Srila Prabhupada, who made it clear that he is a pure devotee of the Lord, but sometimes Krishna will put his pure devotees under a temporary illusion, you know, like Yogamaya, will put them under an illusion to make them look like they're bewildered for some messages to come through. Just like Arjun was made to be bewildered at the beginning of the Kurukshetra war, so that Bhagavad Gita can be spoken, right? Parikshit Maharaj externally committed a offense by giving the snake on it, for which he received a reaction. But it was orchestrated by Yogamaya, right? The Lord's internal energy. We wouldn't know that necessarily unless it's the acharyas giving us that understanding, right? It's because of their mercy that we can understand this. Similarly, when it comes to our own decisions and knowing when is Krishna telling me what is the right thing to do, especially important decisions, I think it's about relying on higher authorities who can help you, because we may, especially if we're under the modes, unless we are above the modes ourselves, right? If we're not, then we can't really trust our mind fully, right? So therefore, we need to rely on higher authorities to guide us in when to fight, when not to fight. And Arjun himself shows that as well. He didn't know what to do, so he goes to Krishna. Yeah, I don't know if there's any other anything to add on to that, or I don't know if you had another Parama, anything else?
I didn't have anything to add to that, but I had a statement. was reading when I was reading Active Devotion about impersonalism.
Oh, so actually, one thing I'll say as well. Sorry, just one thing, Devarshi. I mean, and one of the things also is our mood that we have in our Krishna consciousness. Like, there's a book now called The Living Name by Sachinandan Swami Maharaj. And in it, he mentions that the mood we should have when we're chanting, but I would say it applies to our attitude in Krishna consciousness, is a mood of a receiver, not an achiever. So, you know, like, we get out of the way and let Krishna do his magic through us. And regardless of whatever obstacles come in our way, we just keep trying to access and receive that mercy, as opposed to trying to achieve. Because, you know, when you try to say, I'm achieving Krishna consciousness, it's almost like, I can do this, you know, I'm going to master the holy names. I'm going to master the process, you know, like you master a skill set. But that's not the mood you're going to have, because it's ego-driven. Whereas if we say, look, I'm helpless, I don't know what is right or wrong, you know, Durgame Pati, you know, like that verse in the CC where it says, I'm helpless, don't know which way to go, that kind of mood. And then Krishna can actually give you more and more signs. But yeah, higher authorities, I think, is the key thing there. Yeah. Sorry, Devarshi Prabhu.
Yeah, I just had a comment. A paragraph that I was reading on Nectar Devotion was when I was in Vrindavan, and Prabhupada was mentioning here, where's it gone? That they're actually the impersonals are enemies of God because they cannot tolerate the unparalleled opulence of the Lord. They try always to place themselves on the same level with the Lord. That is due to their envious attitude. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has proclaimed the impersonals to be offenders of the Lord. The Lord is so kind, however, that even though they are his enemies, they are still allowed to enter into the spiritual kingdom and remain in the impersonal Brahma Jyoti.
Yeah, that's powerful. Okay, thank you very much. We shall finish here. Granth Raj Srimad Bhagatam Ki Jai.